Welcome to another fascinating discussion from the University of Life. I'm your host, Sean Roundy. Today's program, Good and Hard, in which we investigate several tales of suffering to find out whether bad things are good, what that even means, and what difference it makes. Maybe it's human nature, or all the advertisements featuring carefree vacations and luxury automobiles that teach us to value comfort and call it good. But if you take a glance around, it quickly becomes obvious that these meticulously crafted marketing messages don't reflect real life. In good literature, or the movies, for example, the hero rarely escapes unscathed. If they have no weakness, then the story feels flat and pointless. The reason we identify with trials so much is because we suffer too, in small and large ways, every single day of our lives. I like to imagine that someday in the far distant future, we'll all be together up in heaven watching reruns of our lives as we lounge about while munching popcorn where every kernel pops on puffy white clouds. I suspect that, for the most part, we won't watch those days we call our favorites here in mortality, the fun, happy, easy ones. I bet we'll enjoy our worst days much more, the hard times, the trials and challenges, and when we don't give up, when we push through our difficulties with even just a trace of faith or courage, that's when we'll jump to our feet and cheer and blow our trumpets. I think we'll enjoy watching those moments precisely because they were hard. And in the grand scheme of things, such moments matter so much. I interviewed 5 people for today's show: a mother, a young cowboy, a survivor, a thrill seeker, and an accidental jailer. Listen in on these very engaging stories of difficult or unpleasant experiences, and let's see if we can learn to appreciate our hard times better without having to wait for the detached wisdom of hindsight. First, let's listen to Kirsten, a first-time mother. All right, question number 1. Tell me about one of the most difficult or unpleasant things you've ever experienced.
I can think of some, but then I don't want to tell those ones.
Yeah.
Let me think here. Probably giving birth to my first baby was incredibly hard and emotionally draining and physically exhausting. I couldn't walk for 3 days. I had used every muscle in my body, and I was in shape too. And I still, Chris had to carry me to the bathroom for a few days after that. And then the process of becoming a mother, you know, in a few hours' time was an exciting, amazing experience, but also incredibly overwhelming and scary. And so I'd have to say that was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
In a few minutes, we'll hear Kirsten's comments about the good that came from that experience. But first, I want to play you a story from her mother, also about a hard moment being a mother. But I should warn you, this one is much, much more difficult to listen to.
We had a wonderful 20-year-old son who went on a fishing trip up in the High Uintas to Granddaddy Lake. And he wasn't catching any fish, and his friend wasn't either, but our son Carl decided that he would swim to a little island, and then he would swim back. Well, he got about 2/3 of the way there and started yelling for help, and we're thinking that he got cramps.
Because of the cold water?
Because of the cold water. And he just sunk down, and his friend put on his wading boots and started out to him, but then when his boots filled with water and it was so cold, he just knew he couldn't do anything. He just yelled and cried, but nothing would work. So the Granddaddy Lake is about 5 miles from a road. So he just ran as fast as he could, knowing that it wouldn't make any difference. So the friend had called the police department here, and so the police chief, who was a friend of ours in our state, he told us right there, And I don't remember his exact words, but something about he didn't even want to tell me. And I said, what? And he said, your son Carl drowned. And it felt like, it was the most odd sensation. It felt like every bone in my body had just crushed together. It was so painful to hear that and to think about it that I just couldn't accept it. It was just too much. It hurt so bad.
Later in the show, we'll try and perhaps succeed, perhaps fail, to put that story into perspective. But I'd like to lighten things up a little bit more with another intense story with I won't tell you the outcome. And you'll get the idea that I really didn't have to go far to collect stories of suffering. This one comes from Kirsten's husband, Chris.
I was 6 at the time, and he was 5. And we had gone out just to play in the street, found a grate, square-looking grate. It was just in the road. It was a drain. And we pulled it off, got it up, you know, and moved it off of the hole. And he climbed down inside. And just as he climbed down inside, and I was going to put it back on top of him, I needed to run in and use the bathroom.
And at this point, when he's down in the hole under this little prison-looking grate, what are you guys feeling? Is it just fun?
We were just having a good time with it. I mean, the idea was to get him in, put the top over him, and then after a little while, take the top off, you know, the grate off, and then have him come out. And then I would jump down, and then we'd do the same thing to me. So anyway, I ran inside. Went to the bathroom, and then my mom said, hey, dinner's ready. So I sat down and had some dinner. And so as I was sitting there, I noticed it started to rain. And it never dawned on me. Nothing ever sparked my memory at this point. And so,
how long has this been at this point?
Probably half an hour at that point. And then I walked up to the window to look at the rain, and it was just a downpour. Just heavy rain. And it was the kind of rain that you would notice, you know. And the streets were just running with water. I was just like, wow, that is amazing rain. And I looked out, clear down the street, and I could see all of a sudden where we'd been playing in that grate. And then everything came back. And I realized that he was in there. So I just took off downstairs, and I ran right up to it. And there he was underneath it, hanging onto it. And the water was just pouring down just along the sides of his face. It was coming, you know, clear from the side of the grate and flowing to right where his face was. And he was hanging on the grate, and his mouth was right up against the grate, and it was just barely missing, you know, his face.
At this point, how long had it been raining that hard?
Probably 45 minutes at that
wow.
point. Yeah. So anyway, there he was. Just looking at his face was pretty traumatic. But then we picked up the grate and moved it off, and I lifted him out. And then I don't remember anything else. We didn't mention it to my mom. We didn't, you know, talk about it together much after that. It was just like, do you remember when that happened? And he would be like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. Or he'd get mad at me. And then he would say some snide thing about me leaving him in the drain,
yeah.
That kind of thing. So, but that was it. And so nothing ever happened, but he got wet.
Here's one more story for you now, this time from Kirsten's nephew, in which we learn that sometimes it's not your own suffering that's the hardest to bear, but the suffering of others.
I remember a time this past summer. We were riding horses from one ranch to another. We were training horses down in southern Utah, me and my buddy Cyrus. And neither of our horses had shoes on. And we were told that the trail was mostly sandy with just a few rocky areas. Halfway there, we lost the trail and couldn't find it anywhere. And in order to, and we knew that in order to get to the ranch, it was going to be really, really rocky, and so we ended up just headed back. And on the way back, we actually lost the trail as well. It was the weirdest thing. And we were on rocks almost the whole time, and we were about 3 miles away from the ranch. And it was very, very hot and dry. This was down in southern Utah, and we didn't have any water, and the horses couldn't go very fast. Their hooves were getting really, really tender from all these big rocks. And I just remember being the most thirsty I've ever been and just feeling so bad for those horses. I felt so bad for them. I felt like I just felt horrible. And Cyrus felt the same way. And I remember we would stop the horses, and then one of us would run up and hike up a hill or something and just scout out the route, you know, and see, okay, this way is going to be easiest. Let's go around this side or something like that. And anyway, it took us about like 4 to 6 hours probably just going, you know, 3-4 miles on those horses. And it was just because of the rocky terrain and bad planning and, you know, no water or anything. So it was pretty wild.
I should have known I was getting myself in trouble asking some tough questions, asking about tough times like that. But luckily, I've just brought in a pair of co-hosts. Please welcome Tiffany Bundy and Emily Simmons.
Hello.
Hey there.
They're going to help us process these a little bit. So what was your reaction to those experiences you heard?
I think my first reaction was just heart-wrenching for most of them. Of course, the one under the grate, that one was a little bit funnier.
I'm really struck by the concept that we talked about earlier with the, you know, this image of we're in heaven, we're looking back on our life and cheering. And I wonder, is there a hierarchy of hard things? You know, I could see myself cheering for accomplishing something that was difficult or overcoming a trial. But some of these real life tragedies, I can't see even when it's all over, even when my family is back together and I am looking on this in hindsight, I still can't see myself celebrating. Like, I overcame that.
Well, even if it was something that was terribly hard, I don't know, I'm thinking about kind of, you know, one of my nieces died. And not that I think my brother would celebrate over that, but it was the first time I really saw, after my family had gone through some awful things, that I really saw our family pull together. Mm-hmm. And saw kind of us heal from past experiences that had been so hard.
And is it sometimes a question of distance? Because I remember a time in my life that was pretty hard. I could not listen to sad songs because they just were way too real for me. I was just like, shut up! I don't want to hear that right now. So maybe in distance we can look at those hard times that, you know, like Marilee losing her son. How can that make sense? And yet maybe in the future we'll be wiser and we'll say just enduring that with such strength and grace and raising the family despite it, maybe that will be a triumph.
So is the only way for a hard situation to have value is if we learn something from it? Like, is it possible for pointless suffering to still be positive? I mean, or do you have to learn something? Is that the only redeeming thing that we find?
Emily, you're getting your master's degree in, what is it?
Bachelor's degree.
Bachelor's.
English literature.
In English literature. Mm-hmm. And so your question reminds me of not so much American literature, mm-hmm. but at least not modern contemporary stuff so much. But in a lot of them, it's all just about people suffering and that's it. Anna Karenina, one of the most popular novels out there. What is, it's been too long since I don't remember his name. What does he learn in the end? He's like, he thinks he's going to have all these epiphanies and life will be good from now on. And his final epiphany is, nah, it's pretty much going to be kind of similar.
Well, you know, but even a lot of modern literature, you know, I feel like Hemingway in particular is just bleak. There's just a lot of bleakness in a lot of...
Yeah.
And it's hard. I want there to be a resolution. I want there to be I learned from this. I got, you know, at least show me a climax and then a conclusion. And there has to be some progress there and not just pointlessness.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I meant by modern. I was trying to be more like pop, modern American stuff, where there's a happy ending in
every half hour at the end of the sitcom, you know, and everything go back. Because one thing that I think makes all those other things
Steinbeck?
Thank you. Yeah. Literature is people look at it and say, that's true to life. Mm-hmm. That's not sugarcoated.
Well, and I don't think it has to be sugarcoated, but I think Emily has a point. I think you do have to be able to at least learn something from it for it to become something positive. But I think in reality, don't we have our happy ending? Because if we endure to the end, then we have eternal life. And to me, that will make all the challenges worth it.
And if we notice that we gain some strength from our experience in the meantime, that can be a happy ending, or that can be a positive.
Right, a temporary happy ending that, okay, I made it through that. Yeah. And also not only the chance to become stronger and to grow, but the chance also to learn compassion for others. It's definitely through the trials that we then take a step back and are slower to judge, are more willing mm-hmm. to accept others' faults, or are more willing to love somebody regardless of those faults. So I think that creates a happy ending in and of itself in the short run.
Good point, even though we often don't appreciate it because don't we want things, happy endings, to feel good?
Absolutely.
It's like to judge happy or sad, you know, good or bad, you have to have some kind of evaluation criteria. You have to say it's good according to what? And if our criteria was spiritual growth, maturity, we'd look at a lot of these situations and say, you know, that was worth it. I got my value. But unfortunately, we're natural man. We're human nature. And we say, no, I want to be comfortable. And that's how we've judged good and bad. But there are so many criteria you could choose from.
Well, and I think that's part of it, is it now has to depend upon the individual and how they interpret that situation.
Yes. Mm.
The same situation can happen to two individuals, and dependent upon how they decide to interpret it and move forward with it will also determine whether they end up with a happy ending or with just something that becomes pointless suffering.
Let me give you the biggest challenge I can think of right now. Think back to Marilee's story about her son, Brownie.
Yeah, that is a big challenge.
Can you think of some way to make sense of that, to give value now, not just the future happy ending, maybe when we find out he's doing all this great work on the other side?
If we do that, is it not minimizing the impact of the event?
Of the challenge.
I mean, don't we have this tendency to be like, oh, you know, your grandfather died. Well, at least he's not suffering anymore. At least, you know, we come up with this trite phrases to try to comfort or to try to, you know, give a happy ending. Well, look, yes, you're in miserable pain right now, but guess what? Here's the bright side. And I don't think that's actually helpful.
No.
In fact, I think it actually hurts worse.
I think
because,
it does,
like you said, it minimizes their pain. And then
and it
they're
doesn't
like,
validate.
Well, thanks.
It says it's not okay to hurt and be confused and angry.
Whereas I think there is a point to suffering and grief, and you need to acknowledge that. So I'm kind of having a hard time with your question. I don't know. How can you validate it right now?
I'm sorry. I almost think that Marilee is the only one who's allowed to say, this is the lesson from this. Because anyone outside of her, I mean, obviously her family can say what they have learned from it. But for a stranger or someone to evaluate her situation and say, this is the lesson in this, I think that is almost insulting.
I think that's very respectful perspective that you have there. And I think that's an appropriate way to treat it. But now I'm going to turn the question, because we are doing a little radio show and trying to learn something, and ask, if this happened to you, could you find purposeful meaning in that experience?
I don't know if initially in the moment I could. Yeah. I think that would be really, really hard. And I think if, like Emily says, if somebody were to come to me and say, well, here's the meaning you can find in it.
Oh,
that
thank
would prompt
you.
A fight.
Oh. Yeah. And I asked
for some bad feelings.
I can't think of one. I know you're both brilliant.
Well, now I proved we're not.
You know, I have four kids.
Yeah.
And I don't know, somebody told me this, that having children means watching your heart walk around outside of your body. And that is such a true statement to, you are so vulnerable all the time. And so the idea, you know, so I have had the pictures in my head of what if? And I think I've seen so many people who have suffered death of children and major tragedies like this, and I've seen them come up with what, you know, that it has been a positive thing. Not that they would choose to do it, but they have found some purpose. They have found meaning, found value in it, that I do think that I would eventually come to peace and be able to take
something. You know, positive. What you just made me think of?
Tell me.
Acceptance. Maybe just coming to accept, which is the last step of the grieving process.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's where we find meaning. At least we find some peace. We move on. Maybe that's all there is sometimes.
I think that might be a point, because I do think eventually I'd be able to say, yes, there were lessons from this. I think in the moment when that first starts, when that grieving process first starts, and maybe for a long time afterwards, it would be, I don't know what the meaning of this is, and I don't know that I've learned a lesson yet from this. But there would maybe be, maybe the triumph is the hope that you would find some meaning from it. And you'd come out on the other side a better person.
Would you like to find out what our interviewees said about finding meaning in their experience?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Isn't that why we're here?
Yes, you're right. You're right. Let's see what they came up with and then see what they have to say about that.
Let's take it from simple to complex this time. First, we'll hear from Chris, the accidental jailer. Then we'll listen to Preston, our young cowboy. Then Kirsten, and then Marilee. Do you remember at what point after you got him out of the drain, it stopped seeming so traumatic?
Yeah, I was probably in my teens.
Really? Yeah. So 10 years or so.
Yeah. It was a while. But, you know, he would bring it up as a way to kind of go, you know, see, your memory's not good. You know, obviously your memory's not good because you left me in the drain, you know. So
after it was all over, or at any point, did anything good come of this experience?
Well, like I said, we were training those horses, and I think those horses looked at us the next day like, okay, we'll be nice, you know. We're not going to buck today, you know. And so I don't know if it was just because they're sore or whatever, or they just respected us after that. But, yeah, I'd say the horses were more mellowed out after that, and that was good.
How about yourself? Did you have any change, you or Cyrus, from the experience?
Well, from then on, we started carrying water every once in a while. So, yeah, we were more prepared after that, I'd say. Yeah.
You know, in this case, the second question is going to be surprisingly easy. And that is, did anything good come from your experience?
Oh. Yes, for sure. Yes, for sure. And I think that that's the case with anything really difficult. Something good generally always comes from it if you... especially as the years pass and you see the benefits from whatever you went through.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What about the hard physical and emotional nature of it? Was there benefit from the hardship other than getting obviously a wonderful child?
Well, yes. Personally, it helped me because I knew that I could give birth to other children and it would probably never be that hard again. And so it made me realize, oh, I can do this again, and it's not going to be that hard, so it'll be a piece of cake, which isn't necessarily true, but it helped me get through that. And then also, as my role as a childbirth educator, I could tell that story to people and say, learn from my experience, learn what you can do to avoid my experience, and also, I did this incredibly hard thing, and so, hence, you can too.
It was hard every second.
Yeah.
I never felt like this was supposed to happen.
How long has it been now?
18 years. This is the first time I've ever told it without crying.
Yes. I was going to say it's a hard story just to listen to. Does it?
It is hard.
Get any easier?
Oh yeah, it must, because I'm not crying about it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sorry that happened.
I am too.
This is going to sound like a really callous question. I hate asking it, but it's just in case, it's part of my little interview setup. Is there anything good that came from this event?
Oh, there probably is if I really tried to look at it on the right side of the problem. But I don't see any good. Because I look at all of my little grandchildren and who my children married or everything, and I think, oh, Carl, you know, I'd love to know your children, your wife, what you do for a living. You know, I'm just curious about all those things, but he's just missed it all.
Yeah. All these thoughts cross my mind of stupid things I could say, like, you know, lots of people die young.
Oh, this, yeah.
That doesn't make any difference, does it?
No, it didn't make a bit of difference. I was really angry for a while. You know, people say when somebody dies or anything, the peace they feel, oh, never happened. Yeah. I still just miss him so much. In fact, I was sitting on the bed last night going through pictures of kids, you know, and I've got boxes of pictures, and every time I'd come to him, I'd cry.
Yeah.
He was probably the most calm of our children, the most committed to the church and to his friends, people that he knew. Everybody who would come to the viewing and to the funeral and everything would say that. He was my best friend, and I thought, how many best friends can you have? Oh, gosh. Bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we had him as long as we did.
Is it best to not forget, other than the fact that it's impossible?
Well, I don't think about him every day.
Yeah.
For years I did. I thought, will I ever stop remembering? Will I ever stop thinking? Will I ever stop crying, you know? And there are days that go by that I don't really think about him. I thought that would never happen, but it did.
Is that good?
More calming to me, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing your story.
You're welcome, you're welcome, you're welcome.
Try and make it a little tribute.
Oh, thank you.
To a great guy.
Yeah, he was. He is. That's what I have to keep thinking. He is a great guy, and he's still there and doing important things, I'm sure.
Yeah, a different mission.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So now you've heard their responses after the fact. What do you guys think?
That's a really deep question. Listening to all of those.
Did any one of those stand out in particular, catch your interest?
Well, I thought it was very interesting about Carl dying that she hasn't found a point for that. And I think that was something we were mentioning before, is she is the only one that could find reason for it. And maybe, so what was running through my head is, will there be a point for her eventually? And will she learn some good that came from that? Or...
it's hard to imagine, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Other than acceptance.
Or will that... is acceptance the resolve for her? Is that all she's going to have? Is acceptance.
And, you know, we all have things in our lives where there's no resolution. Someone hurts you. They don't say sorry. You're never going to have resolution.
Yeah.
So that's a huge scale with, you know, losing a son.
Yeah.
That's nothing compared to like a rough breakup or something. But we all have parallels, even though we have little wimpy parallels, hopefully.
And the only thing that I can hope is from that one, and I think this is why she keeps going what she's going through, but my hope is that the Lord will somehow make that right. And there will be more of a resolution than just acceptance.
Yeah.
At a future date.
You know, in the distant, you know, afterlife, I can't imagine it won't be fine, totally okay. But boy, I can't imagine. That's the point. I can't imagine.
And I can't imagine it ever being okay in this life. Like she said, she thought about it for every day. And finally she's getting to the point that she isn't thinking about it every day.
It's getting easier a little bit.
Right. But I still think that is something she will carry to the grave.
Yeah.
What do you think about people who seem to have what we might judge, you know, and as we pointed out, we really can't judge. We might judge to be a small trial,
and they just can't get over it.
Oh, we are. I think our trials are for us personally.
Absolutely.
And the way that we interact with them and the things that we get from them and the way we grow. So individual. So individual.
Yeah. Well, and
it reminds me of Viktor Frankl. One of my favorite points he makes in Man's Search for Meaning, you know, in the concentration camps and all. And he says this phrase, he says, human suffering is infinite. And what that means is it's like a gas. It's like a gas in a vacuum. So you have a room. If you put 1 liter of oxygen in it, it fills the entire room. So when your daughter grows up and doesn't get asked to prom, probably because they won't be even having proms. I read an article about how kids would rather stay home and text. And she's miserable. You know, from the outside perspective, you're like, you're a teenage girl, you're overreacting, you're emotional thinking. Mm-hmm. But it's real for her, you know?
Oh, it's very real. And it hurts her in that moment. And she is so frustrated and can't see the end. And one of the things is, like Emily said, yours could be so different for you. And it's not only because of how you respond to it. It's because of a whole history you
have. Your context.
Your context of... You have had so much leading up to that moment that is so different from anybody else's that this will be a completely different challenge for you than it would be for anybody else.
It's the knife that breaks the camel's back. And we say, oh, it's this little pocket knife, but it doesn't matter.
Right. It's, yeah, it's all these things that led up to something. Like Carl's death. That was a huge event that I don't care who you put in that instance. It's going to be a massive trial.
So my question is... then is it actually possible to learn from someone else's experience?
I hope so.
That was one of the things in the childbirth story. She said, now because I've experienced this, I can teach others, you know, what it was like for me. And so she has a very practical application for her suffering where she can pass on knowledge to other people. But did Marilee's, is her experience something that we can say, oh, I heard her story. I have an understanding to a certain extent of what her pain is like. Therefore, when I experience it myself, I will have some additional capacity. You know what I mean?
Maybe it's just like the literature, of the suffering in literature. And early on, Tiffany, you mentioned how it maybe just deepens our feelings, our patience, our humility.
Empathy.
Empathy. Maybe that's all we get from it.
And maybe, or... you know, you had brought up, would that help us in a future? I don't think if I ever lost a son, like she lost Carl, would I ever be able to handle it any better? No. But could I hang on to the hope of, I remember a story where she said it was so hard and that it never made sense to her. But you know what? She's gotten through it. Maybe I can get through it too.
And
maybe
it would validate your pain.
Right.
And that could be one of the best things. Yeah.
And she hurt and she couldn't get over this for years and years and years. It's been, 15 years? 18 years. And she is still feeling the pain from that. Maybe that, like you said, would validate my pain a little bit when 18 years later, I'm still struggling too.
And
with
you think
that.
I'm normal.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay to be miserable.
I'm not the only one.
My grandmother has a box of antique toy cars, like Hot Wheel cars. That were her son's. Her son died when he was in his 20s. So we're talking, she has carried this box of cars for 45 years. And when we were packing her to move her to a new home just a couple of years ago, and we're getting rid of 90% of her belongings, that box went with her. I mean, she kept that because that was her last tangible relationship with her son who she had lost. And it didn't ever stop. It did not ever stop.
So even 45 years later. Yeah. So maybe that's the one thing that we could gain from it is,
you know,
this is normal.
You know what else we could gain? We could look at that experience and say, that is so hard. I would rather, and this is a terrible idea what I'm about to say, but it happens. I would rather shut down a piece of my heart so I don't have to suffer that for the rest of my life. Now I say it's terrible because you shut down part of your heart, you kind of shut down the whole thing. It's a dangerous path to go down. But when we get overloaded, that happens. That's a lot of the cause of depression. We just are overloaded. And I want to do a whole other show on sometimes people who are depressed, it means you're awesome. You have deep feelings, you know? So we can look at, just like in literature, I taught an intro to literature class once, one of my favorite classes I've ever taught. We had the most fascinating discussions. And one of the overarching questions we'd ask is identity. Who are you? How did you become that person? Mm-hmm. What can you do about it? And as we watched people, like one example, Okonkwo in Things Fall Apart, he was the classic, you know, strong African warrior, and then the English come and colonize, and the culture changes, and he's kicked out for a while because of an accident, and he comes back, and all the people are, his culture is different. Mm-hmm. And he, if you remember the ending, he says, I'm going to make everyone rise up. I'm going to cut off the head of this lackey, this minister's, you know, messenger, and everyone will rise up and we'll throw the English out. And he does it. And everyone just stands there in shock, like, what are you doing? Oh. And so I won't tell the ending in case you haven't read this book. Excellent book. Go read that. But as we talked about this, we just analyzed and we said, if he would have been more aware of his options and who he was and what was going on, and he could have chosen a different way. And maybe that's the best hope for ourselves when we find an impossible conundrum that we find ourselves in. Look around and say, what else could I do?
What other options
do
I have?
What other examples do I have to look to?
But one of the things you said in that is so poignant to me is you said that something about through our trials, we gain our identity, or something about gaining our identity. And it is only through our trials that we gain our identity. If you think back and anybody asks you, why did you become the person that you became? It has nothing to do with the happy moments. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It most generally has to do with all of the stuff we had to slosh through mm-hmm. to find that meaning and become the strong person that we are. And the only thing I can think of is, it is through our hard challenges, we have the opportunity to become a god and goddesses. And it is only through doing all this stuff that bends and breaks and hurts and bruises us that we can become like our Father in heaven. And it's without that, there is no opportunity. And so as hard as it is,
we come out soft and
right.
No strength of character. And
I'm thinking courage. About, is it Marilyn that's Carl's mother?
Marilee.
I'm thinking about Marilee, and I think she must be a much tougher woman
than I
for what she has gone through. She has experienced something I can't fathom, and she already is a leap and step ahead of me on learning all the stuff that I yet haven't touched.
I heard a slightly, I could say opposing, but I'm going to say parallel idea. There was some quote where someone said, character is not formed in the storm, it's revealed in the storm, but it's formed in your daily habits and living and choices.
Oh, that's a good point. So maybe in her daily habit to start accepting Carl's death is where she has formed into this beautiful
person. That's where the strength came.
Yeah.
Not from the event of the death itself.
Absolutely.
But in the everyday getting out of bed. That's the strong part. That's where the strength comes.
And being present for her family in every moment, she's excellent at that. So Carl's death is not the whole of her life. It's a big part. Mm. But she has so many other parts of her
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. Everything else that she's accomplished, despite, like you said, getting out of bed, being there, despite probably just being like, at times, why?
And that's probably one of the best advices for people who get overwhelmed and they're depressed is do something every day.
Absolutely.
You need rest. You need time. It takes as long as it takes, but do something to give yourself a chance.
Well, and also it's through the doing something and pushing yourself through something that you build that confidence that brings you out of that depression or out of that hurt. And this is coming from somebody who has struggled with depression before. Mm-hmm. It's my being able to say, okay, today was getting this done. And it was a small thing for anybody else.
And celebrate.
Yes. And being like, I did that. Can you imagine? I did laundry today.
Grocery shopping. That was the hard thing for me.
It got checked off the list.
And just like Kirsten, you realize, I can do that hard thing. I can do it again.
Absolutely. And so you tell yourself on those hard days, you know what? Today is hard. But I've done hard, and I've come through hard, and I can keep doing it.
Yeah. There's a balance, I think, between, our struggles help define us, but we don't want to become victims of those struggles. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we don't want to take that depressed person, grieving person label, and that is now who we are, even though it creates who we are. But, you know, how do you find that balance between allowing these to push you and grow you without succumbing to this is all I am?
And maybe that's finding the other aspects of your life, of who you are, mm-hmm. and making it wider than that, among other things.
That's a very good point. How do you not become the label, but become what you were meant to become?
You know, that is such a good topic that we should do an entire show on it. And you guys are so much fun to talk to. Let's definitely do this again.
I would love to do this again.
I would love to do this as well.
Let's end this with one of my favorite, most beautiful points I've ever heard on this topic. And it's called Resolution. And it's from music.
Yeah.
And I can see you're familiar with this. And basically the idea is your life is a song. And it doesn't matter how discordant the chords and harmonies and dissonances that have been in your past, you know, that's played. You can't unplay that music. But as soon as you do a little transition into maybe some beautiful major chord, the past doesn't matter anymore. And your new chord is all the more beautiful because of the contrast.
Comparing it against what you've heard, the bad against the good, makes it that much more beautiful.
Yeah. So the point, I think, is look to the present, look to the future. Make it good. Let go to the extent that you can of the past. And I want to end with, I want to play a little segment of a movie that I love, Green Card from 1990. It's got Gerard Depardieu. He's an immigrant, and Andy McDowell marries him so he can get his green card. The subtitle of the movie, it says something like, it's about a couple who get married, then meet, then fall in love. And at one point, they visit Andy's mother, played by Lois Smith, and they want her to donate to support some trees for some children in the city, New York City, I'm sure. And they find out that Gerard's character is a pianist. She asks him to play. And with some controlling, he finally agrees to do it. But listen to this. The music is nothing like they expected.
Oh, why not, George? Just one piece.
Oh, do you mind?
It isn't often we have a foley in the house.
Yes, that's true.
Come on, George.
But it works out for the best, because afterward there's a very uncomfortable silence and the mother is not impressed at all when suddenly Gerard begins to play a very melodic, very gentle piece in the background, and he asks her to translate some French and tells a little story about children and trees. And because of the contrast with the harsh music he played at first and then the tender music after, it makes much more of an impression, and in the end it works out. So listen to this snippet.
He's not Mozart.
I know.
Could you translate for me, madame?
What of?
Une fois j'ai entendu le bruit du vent dans les arbres.
Once I heard the sound of the wind in the trees. I think that's it.
Une fois j'ai entendu le bruit du rire des enfants.
Once I heard the sound of the laughter of children.
Et j'ai pleuré à chaud de larmes pour ces arbres perdus.
And I wept warm, salted tears for the lost trees.
Je sais venir les petits enfants dans les arbres. Et je leur donnerai de l'espoir, il a dit.
Let The little children come under the trees, and I will give them hope, he said.
Il n'y a plus d'arbres pour ces pauvres enfants perdus.
But there are no trees for the poor, lost, poor children.
La pourriture est leur jouet.
Decay is their toy.
La décadence est leur jeu.
Despair is their game.
Ils n'ont que des ordures à escalader.
They have only chaos to climb.
Trees.
And so that's our show for today. There is good and bad if you know how to find it. Sometimes it's easier, you know, said than done.
This has been wonderful. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, I hope it's opened your awareness for the options we have. That you really can choose so much more of your life, than including your thoughts and feelings. It takes work, but you can make something beautiful no matter what your past has been.
Well, thank you, Sean. It's been great.
Thanks, Tiffany and Emily.
So fun.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Okay.
And we'll see you all next time. Hope you tune in for our next discussion on the University of Life.